Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You are listening to Total EM. For the first clinical podcast of 2018, I decided I want to talk about something that is a really common complaint that really isn't talked about much in the FOMED world, and that's dental pain. And some of you may be groaning. I know sometimes I groan with this too. And even though most of the time this really isn't an emergent complaint, that we may actually very easily miss. And part of the way I think about dental pain, and when I was going through the podcast and trying to figure out how I wanted to present this, I thought of this kind of nice, simple way of putting it, and that is the 3-2-1 concept. So although we're not going to strictly follow this 3-2-1 order, I do want to talk about it because first, there are three key dental blocks, which really you should know that will help with your dental pain patients. The second is that there are two essential categories of dental pain, and that's infection or fracture. Now, fracture can also be dislocation, but I like to think of it as infection or fracture. Those are the two things that are bringing them in. Finally, the one is to mean that they get at least one antibiotic, which usually they're only going to get one, but that they get an antibiotic in almost all cases, especially if there's any suspicion of or concern for infection. Because a lot of times it's not going to be super obvious. We're going to talk about that here more in a second. All right, so like I said, we're not going to go quite in order, but let's hit probably the first part and the most important part, and that is that there are two main categories of patients. Those who you suspect infection in are those who you're concerned about a fracture or dislocation. Now, our primary concern is for emergencies, of course. Like I said at the beginning, a lot of these, they don't really seem like emergencies initially. But with infection, you can have deep space infections such as Ludwig's angina, and then you can have abscesses such as peritonsillar or retropharyngeal abscesses. And I've got to see all of these. And all of these are emergencies, particularly you're worried about airway compromise with these patients. A lot of these are going to have some form of classic concerns that you're going to see. So maybe changes in voice or trismus or the inability to handle secretions. Those types of things need to be red flags in your mind. You need to be able to have some way to prove that this isn't an emergency, because a lot of times these patients can be very deceiving. You may not really think that much about them. They have a little bit of dental pain. They can't really open their mouth because it hurts. And, you know, they got some swelling there, but it's probably not a bad thing. It's probably not this really big, roaring abscess. And the next thing you know, they've got Ludwig's angina and they die as a result, or they have some major complication, which you could have prevented if you recognized it the first time. And sometimes you may not be able to recognize it the first time. There's no doubt about that. Anything with emergency medicine, there's always that possibility that the first presentation is so early before really the acute phase of things that kicks in that makes you better diagnose that. We're not talking about those types of things. But when you see those types of things, the change of the voice, the trismus, the inability to hand secretions, just to name a few, really question, is this someone who I need to be more concerned about? Now, there's also the trauma, the fracture dislocation types. And a lot of these need urgent evaluation, such as fracture with exposed pulp, avulsion, or luxation. And most of these will be referred to a dentist or oral surgeon in the next 24 hours. And that's usually all we need to do with those. But mandible fractures or TMJ dislocations could be true emergencies. And especially if we're worried about an open fracture, those can be a much, much bigger ordeal. And when we see these often go immediately to a specialist for immediate management. And some of these we can manage ourselves, like the TMJ dislocation. In fact, there's some great content both by Corey M and Foamcast about these types of topics, which we'll include in the show notes, and you should definitely check them out as well. Now, also keep in mind that patients could be drug seeking, of course, and we do see a lot of that, but we shouldn't default to that. Don't go and suspect that the main reason why this patient's here is for narcotics, because that isn't always the case. In fact, a lot of these patients are just simply in a lot of pain. They need some help. If you've never had dental pain before, it sucks. And really, a lot of times what we need to do is basically give them antibiotics and treat their pain. Now, I don't usually use opiate medications, not unless they're getting admitted or there's a really good reason why. For most of these patients, they're getting basically NSAIDs, some topical anesthetics, and a lot of times I'll give them a dental block, which leads me to my next point. So there are three main dental blocks that I really want you to know: inferior alveolar, infraorbital and greater palatine. Again, all these will include in show notes because you need to see these to really understand it. And you should definitely practice these before you get too involved with them. Also, you have to keep in mind the dosing. Now, in their respective order, so inferior alveolar followed by infraorbital and then greater palatine, think of 3-2-1 as your dosing. Aha, I used 3-2-1 twice in this podcast in case you're not noticing. That's the amount of cc's I try and use as a goal. Now, sometimes you have to redose these. You may use more, you may use less, particularly in the greater palatine. I usually don't use any more than one cc. A lot of times I'll use just half a cc. But you want to have those options of how much of fluid you're going to inject in that area. And the easiest way to keep track is just simply 3-2-1. A lot of times I use bupivacaine 0.5% plain. That's just my preference, but I notice a lot of people do that and it works really well. You're talking about a medication that, you know, usually lasts about 2 to 6 hours, but the numbing effect can be there a lot longer than that. I've had patients report up to 24 hours of pain relief or so. That's awesome when they do that because that gives plenty of time for the antibiotics to kick in and do their thing to help calm down the pain as well. And then we focus on other alternatives, non-opiate particularly, to help control that pain. It is worth noting that with these, again, we want to focus on as little as possible. And that's pretty easy to do with the right process and the right practice. Again, we'll include some links, especially Medscape has some really good content out there. Now, as mentioned, with dental infections, there should always be antibiotics given, or at least you need to have a really good reason if you did not give antibiotics. And most of these antibiotics are going to be pretty straightforward stuff. A lot of times you're going to use antibiotics such as penicillin VK, which I just don't use as much because it's a lot more dosing. So I tend to use amoxicillin. If someone's allergic to amoxicillin, but it's not a high risk infection or really needs stuff, sometimes cephalexin could be a good alternative. But most of the time, if they have resistance or I'm worried about a significant infection, we're going to go straight to clindamycin. Clindamycin is a more expensive antibiotic, but a lot of times that's what the patient needs. And if they're going to get IV antibiotics, it's a lot of times going to be the first antibiotic they receive. Keep in mind that with these antibiotics, the key is that they get something, even if there's not an obvious sign of infection. If they're talking about dental pain and it's not from a fracture or dislocation or any of that kind of stuff, it's simply my tooth's been hurting and I have bad teeth and this has been going on for a while, but suddenly it's gotten worse. This is probably an infection that's just getting started. Treat them with the antibiotics. Save yourself a lot of time. Your colleagues will also appreciate when these patients don't bounce back. Most of these infections do not actually have an abscess, and that's important to point out too. They may have more of a cellulitis component. A really great example of this was with urgent care wrap, I believe it was, where they talked about a lot of this is more cellulitic versus abscess, and they also talk about how to manage some of these emergencies as well. So we'll definitely include that link in the show notes. Unlike a lot of the content from EM wrap or urgent care wrap or any of that stuff, this one is free, and this one is one that I would highly encourage no matter what level you're at to learn this because it's just good recap if nothing else. Now, keep in mind with a lot of these patients, too, that if there is a worsening condition or there's red flags, such as the ones we've already talked about, that they may still need surgical management. And so sometimes we'll still get imaging on these patients, especially if we're really worried about an abscess. And that, keep in mind as well, that antibiotics are beneficial, even if there's no obvious sign of infection, like we're already talking about. Two reasons. One is if there is an obvious sign, there may be one, just give it a little bit more time. The other two is that the dentist or oral surgeon who's going to see that patient is going to really appreciate you giving them the antibiotics and getting them started. Because a lot of times they're going to make patients wait. And there's multiple reasons why, but one of them is because they feel like their anesthetics won't work as well and they can't do their procedure as well or have higher risk for complications. That's sometimes another issue. If we haven't done the antibiotics to help control the infection, to allow those things to work out better. So just keep that in mind. It's really better to treat them early, get things started, and go from there. So in summary, we talked about three things. The first is that you use three types of blocks, inferior alveolar, infraorbital, and greater palatine. Next, there are two types of dental patients. There are those who come in where you're more concerned about infection versus those who come in with a fracture dislocation type picture. The other is to learn that you need at least one type of antibiotic with these patients. And there you go, the 3-2-1. make sure you know how to do dental blocks. They can save you a lot of time, especially on night shift, especially. I've had a lot of people who come in the middle of the night and people want to know why you're coming in. And simply, a lot of times these patients are coming in because they just can't take the pain anymore. You're able to do a dental block, provide immediate relief. That's not anything that you have to give a prescription for that night. That's great. You give them everything else they need to, the proper follow-up, everything like that. Perfect. You're golden. That's what patients a lot of times really want. They just want their pain controlled. And if you can do a great dental block, all the better. All right. So again, this was another quick podcast. Just want to release this information because this is something I've been thinking about for a while. And when I have students rotate with me, I want them to know this content too. And just keep in mind, we're going to work in all different settings, but we all will see dental pain patients. So that's it for now. Until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.